You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the COVID-19 Frontline Podcast Series hosted by Med Learning Group. In this episode, we will discuss new antibody therapy treatments for COVID-19 that have been granted emergency use authorization by the Food and Drug Administration. We will learn what these therapies are and how they work, address barriers to these infusion therapies, and we'll share resources that have been developed to help providers gain access to them. My name is Angela, and I will be the host of today's podcast. Joining me today is Brian Nyquist, President and CEO of the National Infusion Center Association, or NICA, and Executive Director of the Infusion Access Foundation. Through NICA, Brian coordinates and oversees nationwide activities to preserve, optimize, and expand the infusion delivery channel through advocacy, education, and resource development. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Brian, there are now two monoclonal antibody cocktails available under emergency use authorization, or EUA, for people with mild to moderate COVID-19 who are at high risk for progressing to more severe symptoms of the disease. What are these therapies and how do they work?
So when exposed to a virus, it takes our immune system a while to develop our own antibodies against that virus to fight the infection. Monoclonal antibodies are abbreviated as MAB or MAB, so we've been referring to these COVID-19 monoclonal antibodies as CMABs. For these CMAB therapies, scientists have engineered antibodies just like our body would make that are programmed to target specific spike protein on the surface of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Once these engineered antibodies enter the bloodstream, they bind to and block virus from attaching to and entering cells, immediately start fighting the virus by reducing viral replication and viral load while our immune system makes its own antibodies. The reason these therapies need to be administered intravenously is because they are large molecule proteins that would be broken down in our digestive tracts before being absorbed into the bloodstream. So to give you a little comparison in terms of size and complexity in the differences between these MABs and conventional drugs like aspirin, a molecule of aspirin would be the size and complexity of a 10-speed bicycle. In comparison, a monoclonal antibody would be the size and complexity of a small airplane. As such, these monoclonal antibodies are very difficult and expensive to manufacture and require specialized storage, handling, preparation, and administration to avoid breaking and unfolding these antibody proteins that could trigger an immune response against the medication. So currently, there are two monoclonal antibody cocktails that are available under EUA. There is the bamlanivimab and etesevimab combination from Lilly, and the casirivimab and indevimab combination from Regeneron. There are also at least two more therapeutic options in pipeline, one of which we anticipate submitting an EUA in the near future.
So it's important to note that just yesterday, so I should clarify, March 24th, 2021, the FDA halted the distribution of single-agent bamlanivimab nationwide. Can you explain why they did that?
Yeah, absolutely. So even before yesterday, due to the prevalence of a viral variant that has been dubbed the California variant, that's not susceptible to single agent bamlanivimab, the FDA decided to no longer allow ordering of single agent bamlanivimab in three states in particular, California, Arizona, and Nevada, with this variant representing 52%, 25%, and 41% of cases in these states respectively. Again, as of March 24th, as you indicated, due to increasingly high rates of variant infections, the FDA decided to halt distribution of single-agent bamlanivimab across all states. However, according to a Lilly spokesperson, preclinical data demonstrate the combination of bamlanivimab and etesevimab maintains its neutralizing effect against the California variant specifically. And after hearing significant demand for single-agent etesevimab ordering to pair with remaining inventory of single-agent bamlanivimab, Lilly confirmed that the U.S. government has indicated they will enable direct ordering of single-agent etesevimab for this purpose.
And before we go on, let's clarify what it means for a drug to have emergency use authorization. And how is this different from FDA approval or licensure?
Yeah, good call out. So emergency use authorization provides a pathway for the use of unapproved medical products or the unapproved uses of approved medical products in an emergency health crisis to address the burden of serious or life-threatening diseases. Within this pathway, the FDA evaluates all available scientific evidence and balances all known or possible risks with potential benefits in reducing the burden of an emergency health crisis. Because the drug or the indication are not FDA approved, these drugs are referred to as therapies rather than treatments.
The antibodies are specifically indicated for individuals who are at high risk of their mild or moderate symptoms of COVID-19 progressing to severe illness. Under this emergency use authorization, what is the criteria for being a high-risk person with COVID-19?
So there are three main sort of risk categories. First is patients 65 or older, then patients 55 years or older with heart disease or high blood pressure, or COPD or another chronic respiratory disease, including asthma. And then finally, patients that are 12 years or older with either a weakened immune system or those that are taking medicines that weaken their immune system. Patients 12 or older that have a BMI index over 35 or diabetes or chronic kidney disease. So outside of those three current risk categories, we may see these eligibility criteria expand as these therapies become more readily accessible nationwide.
Brian, where can providers go to get more information about this criteria?
Providers may refer to the Frontline website, which is COVID-frontline.com, for more information regarding specific criteria and tools for determining eligibility for these monoclonal antibody therapies.
Great. And once it has been determined that somebody is eligible for an antibody infusion, when should therapy be given?
Since these therapies help reduce viral replication and viral load, they're more effective the closer they're administered to receiving a positive COVID-19 test and up to 10 days of symptom onset. This narrow window of effectiveness is why it's so important for providers to understand the eligibility criteria, understand where your patients can get it, and which sites have drug inventory, as well as schedule availability. Important to understand how you need to refer your patients for these therapies, and also how your patients should present to these care settings for therapy. For patients, it's important to be aware of these therapeutic options, how they differ from conventional drugs and vaccine, how they're administered and what to expect. For example, room temperature saline going into the bloodstream will lower the core body temperature. Patients need to be prepared for that and dress appropriately. It's also important for patients to know how to schedule an appointment and to know how to present for therapy. These therapies are critical stopgaps to alleviate the effects of the pandemic as the vaccine rollout continues to take hold, even for patients that were recently vaccinated. As the virus continues to mutate and we see new variants spread, patients will continue to test positive throughout the rest of the spring and summer, and these monoclonal antibody therapies need to remain available to reduce the burden of infection until we achieve widespread herd immunity. However, even then, CMABs will be a critical tool in reducing disease burden among immune-compromised and unvaccinated populations.
You mentioned that even people who were recently vaccinated can benefit from COVID-19 monoclonal antibody therapies. Can you talk more about this? Are there any safety concerns?
Yeah. So prophylactic vaccine stimulates the immune system to develop antibodies against specific targets, typically surface protein. Once exposed to a pathogen-induced immune challenge, it takes time for the body to develop this immune response and ongoing antibody protection. So if a vaccinated individual is exposed to a sufficient viral load of the SARS-CoV-2 virus before the immune system has developed its own antibodies, there are not enough antibodies in circulation to bind sufficient virus, slow viral replication, and reduce the burden of infection. For these CMAB therapies, the genome of living cells is manipulated to produce antibodies that will target surface protein of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. These cell lines are grown in culture across a series of bioreactors until the manufactured antibodies are harvested, purified, concentrated, freeze-dried, and packaged in sterile vials for reconstitution immediately prior to administration. By administering these engineered antibodies into a patient's bloodstream, we are giving them a chance to reduce the burden of infection while their immune system builds its own immune response. So the sooner we can get antibodies into patients following infection, the quicker we will disrupt viral replication and reduce the symptom burden as well as complications associated with infection. However, if given too late in the course of an infection, the concentration of virus will exceed the volume of antibodies in circulation, so they won't be as effective. And in terms of safety concerns, per the CDC, CMABs are not contraindicated in vaccinated patients, and vaccine administration is not contraindicated in patients that have received CMABs. Although the recommendation is to delay vaccine administration in patients that have recently received CMAB therapy, there isn't strong data to inform a specific window of delay.
What have been the challenges regarding the availability and accessibility of monoclonal antibody infusion therapies for COVID-19?
Well, the challenges have been many, so I'll break them down into sort of categories. For administration sites, the main challenge has been operationalizing these therapies and the safe co-management of COVID-positive and non-positive patient populations within the same care setting. Not necessarily at the same time, but in the same care setting. Also, a lack of infusion capabilities has been a barrier for a number of potential sites. Reimbursement and available liquid capital to invest in establishing or expanding infusion capacity has been another significant challenge. Staffing is also a significant hurdle. Monoclonal antibody preparation administration in particular requires specialized training. With a steep onboarding curve, training staff to competency takes time. Also, inconsistencies in referral streams and inconsistencies across referring prescribers in verifying and documenting patient eligibility has also been a significant challenge that's resulted in delayed treatment. And then finally, for administration sites, the lack of transparency into incidence data make it difficult to project future demand to justify the financial risk and opportunity cost associated with operationalizing a CMAB administration site. For prescribers, main challenges include a lack of knowledge in therapeutic biological products and the perception of insufficient data and evidence for this product category that has resulted in low confidence among prescriber populations. Also, the lack of insight into where administration sites are located, which of these sites are active, which have inventory, and which also have schedule availability has been a significant hurdle as well. And lack of clear and consistent roadmaps for referring patients to treatment sites has also caused delays. Also, high variability in referral, scheduling, and intake workflows across care settings has created a lot of challenge in operationalizing these products. And then finally, for this particular category, more emphasis on waiting for prophylactic vaccine rather than utilizing CMABs as reactive or supplemental therapy has also contributed to delayed uptake. Another challenge for patients is that eligible patients just were not aware of these therapeutic options, how they differ from conventional drugs, where to get them, and what to expect. And then finally, for patient category, patients were not educated on the eligibility window, so we were hearing about countless patients that were declining CMABs in between symptom peaks. After the second peak, when they decided they did want the CMAB therapy, they were unfortunately outside of that eligibility window. And then finally, there were some general factors that also significantly contributed to suboptimal uptake. First and foremost is a lack of media coverage on these COVID monoclonal antibodies. As such, we saw a lack of public awareness and confidence. Additionally, the national response has really focused on vaccine because it's familiar. So COVID monoclonal antibodies were underutilized in reducing disease burden, even in communities with the highest incidence of disease. Additionally, The product was rushed into the channel before the channel was prepared to operationalize these products. Most of the sites that received the first shipments of drug did not have robust infusion capabilities. Those that did still needed time to develop and implement infection control protocols and engineering controls required to mitigate exposure risk among frontline HCPs and non-positive patient populations. And then finally, a lack of federal coordination during the height of the pandemic amidst extreme variation in state-based response strategies was another significant factor that had contributed to delayed uptake and the suboptimal integration of product.
It seems like all of these factors created the perfect storm for delayed and suboptimal uptake of therapeutic options that have significantly reduced disease burden among high-risk patients that have taken them. So what has Nike been doing to assist in the pandemic response and increase awareness of these therapies?
So immediately prior to Lilly receiving EUA approval for bamlanivimab, we began partnering with Lilly to develop their antibody playbook and supporting materials to ensure consistency in quality of care, practice, and safety standards for the handling, storage, preparation, and administration of these therapies. And then we did the same thing with Regeneron as they were preparing to onboard their product as well. We also repurposed our proven locator technology and platform to offer a site locator tool for CMAB administration sites. We also coordinated with stakeholders and state agencies to curate and onboard CMAB allocation data into our NICA locator tool so that all prescribers and eligible patients could find access to therapy regardless of where they live. And then finally, we developed a toolkit of resources and informational materials for prescribers, patients, and infusion providers, including CMAB-specific coding guides, order sets, referral checklists, and drip rate calculation tables that have been publicly available on our website.
And how can one find out where these infusions are available?
NICA's Infusion Center Locator for CMABs is the most comprehensive, publicly available tool for both patients and referring providers seeking administration sites within their communities. This NICA CMAB site locator tool can be accessed at covid.infusioncenter.org. And additionally, information regarding access to monoclonal antibody therapies can be found on the Frontline website at covid-frontline.com, which has direct links to the NICA website and other valuable resources for healthcare providers and patients.
Hopefully, by drawing attention to these new therapies for COVID-19, we can help people from experiencing the more severe symptoms of the illness and avoid the need for hospitalization. That is all the time we have for today. I would like to thank Brian Nyquist for taking the time to speak with us about new monoclonal antibody therapies for mild to moderate COVID-19 for people who have a high risk of progressing to severe illness. And thank you for joining us. We hope you will listen to another episode of the COVID-19 Frontline Podcast.